Time now for the Arizona Media Podcast. Every week, every other week, whenever we get around to it. No, just kidding. Every week we try to go a different direction. On the front of broadcast, go through process, bring you names of present, names of past, big time names across the country, how they go through the process of a day of a basketball game, in the case of Dave Pasch or Bill Walton. In this case, we're going to dive into sports talk in general and where it's gone, where it started. And someone that in the Valley scheme of things, when I mentioned the name Lee Hacksaw Hamilton, people immediately lit up and said, absolutely, would love to hear what Lee is up to in this day and age. And so Saw joins us. I will say up front, Saw was my mentor. And without Lee, I'm not sitting here doing this today. And all that doesn't mean he's going to agree with everything I'm going to talk to him about or that he has to say even nice things about me. It's just, it's a pleasure to have him on the Arizona Media Podcast. How are you?
That's right, Brad. Just blame me for everything you've gotten yourself involved in. How are you doing? Nice to chat with you again. Nice to catch up and say hello to all the people back in the Valley of the Sun.
What are you doing these days, Lee?
I'm a free agent. I'm kind of between positions right now. Have spent 28 years doing sports talk radio in San Diego. Unfortunately, got bought out a couple times. Went across the street. Went and did television for 3 years as a lead sports anchor at Channel 6. Had a blast, learned a lot, kind of recreated myself. And then unfortunately, we woke up one morning and the company that owns the TV station folded the news department and put 77 of us out on waivers in one day. So I'm kind of between jobs, free agent, looking, creating. Do run my own website, write an absolute ton every day. The whole world is doing websites and podcasts now because our industry has gone off in different tangents, but it's just LeeHacksawHamilton.com. It's novel. It's different. If people like what I did on the sports talk show in terms of volumes of information, then they'll probably like what they can access every weekday in terms of Hacksaw's headlines and the best 15 minutes in sports and one man's opinion column. So that's, in summary, that's what I'm doing. I've had a great run. I really enjoy the media, still active in the media. Kind of working a lot in San Diego as if I'm still an active part of the media. I do press conferences and go to ball games and write a ton of stuff and do some freelance stuff on the side for Canadian Network TSN. So I'm busy, and we'll see where the road leads us.
Yeah, you're always a factor. And I see your website and I see your content, and your content is current. I think that's probably the hardest thing for people that say, I want to go into the digital side of things, is if you're going to do this, you have to feed the beast, is what I like to tell the staff. You have to feed the beast every day. You can't just say, okay, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, and that's it. And that's obviously, if people aren't familiar with Lee's work ethic, I saw it every day firsthand. That's you. You're 24/7, 365. You're all in on this. So this actually, the digital age, I would think would play to your strengths.
Well, it does to a degree, but again, a lot of us have gone off on different things, and whether it's podcast or developing our own website, not a lot of money to be made in it, and I think that's the thing that's really hard. We're a creature of habit. I love information. I love to find out what's going on. I love to talk to people. I like to write about what I hear, what I know, what I see, and express opinions on that. So it's just a really different era, but I am also a throwback. I mean, I do like sports talk radio still. I do read the newspaper every day. Obviously, I'm hooked on the internet, and I spend a lot of time on that. I think it's fascinating just the way the industry has changed. Unfortunately, it's not changed for the better. It's gotten a lot tougher. I think radio is going through some very tough times. The print media, newspaper world, is on its deathbed, sadly. And there are so many good guys that I know don't have jobs in the industry that they chose to be successful in. I mean, it's absolutely stunning what has happened to the print industry and to a degree what has happened to sports talk radio. Television is a little bit of a different entity, and those guys still have their jobs. But it's been a tough time for an awful lot of people on this street corner in the industry. And I'm not saying the internet and digital is a negative. I'm just saying things have changed.
Well, the thing with internet and digital, I think the downside, and I'll be curious to hear your response on this and then go further on each one of those arteries that you talked about, radio, TV. The thing with digital is anybody can now pretend that they have content, and they can put anything out there. There's no filter. I call it the world's largest sports bar. That's where we are now, is that anybody can say I'm an expert and really have no background, no credibility, or really no idea what they're writing. But there's people that will consume it and say, well, if it's on the internet, then it must be true. The whole fake news thing that has come out during the Trump administration, Lee, I think it, in some ways for our industry, has been a positive because people are looking at it a little bit closer. But I'm curious from your end, is there just too much access on the digital end? Thus, it's hard to monetize from your view because not everything that's out there is good.
Well, the volume of data, the volume of information out there is unbelievable. I don't know who has time to read all this, look at all this, follow all this. It's the same thing like television. You know how many channels there are on my TV and your TV and the fans in the Valley of the Sun's TV? Who has time to watch all this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to pick and choose in terms of the content that is attractive to you or the content that you believe has credibility and value, and you probably go to that. You know, you dial across the television, and you've got, you know, obviously the major networks, and then you have ESPN, and it's multiples of channels, and then you have Fox, and it's multiples of channels, and now you got the CBS Sports Network and the NBC Sports Network, and everybody's got talk shows, and there's talking heads everywhere, and everybody's doing different varieties of sports reports. And I circle back and say, gee, I only have so many hours in the day to pay attention to this. How can I follow all this and pay attention to all this? And then, obviously, you go to the digital side and you go to the internet side, and everybody's become a citizen journalist, whether they're qualified or not.
Right,
you call
right.
it fake news or
right.
alternative news or whatever. Everybody's a citizen journalist with an opinion. I will say this, the bottom line, the internet, I happen to think, Brad, has really made us a more informed society.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be selective as to who you follow, what you read, and can you believe what you read off the internet. I don't go to a ton of different websites created by guys, by fans, by Joe Sixpack. I gravitate towards the newspaper websites because I think that's where the credibility is. And I gravitate towards the guys that have access to the information. And it's not Joe Sixpack sitting in his garage writing on the internet at 1 o'clock in the morning. It's the credentialed media who's covering the team and has access to the locker room and the dugout and the games, etc. So you have to be selective as to who you follow, and what you believe. But boy, there's a ton of stuff out there, and it's odd because when I started doing sports talk radio, I kind of tend to think I maybe was the internet before the internet, because
sure.
I was the conduit of information, and I had a way to create and find out what I needed to find out to then present to all the listenership, whether it was at the old KTAR in Phoenix or what I did here when we worked together at the old Extra 690 in San Diego. I mean, we delivered a ton of information that people normally did not have access to. Now it's a different world today because they can go ferret out some of this information on the internet that might be free, and others obviously are paid firewalls that you have to subscribe to get access. But I think we're a much more informed society now because of the volume of stuff that's out there. I just don't know who has time to follow all this stuff.
Lee Hamilton with us on the Arizona Media Podcast. I'm going to get back to some of that, what you went into, but I want to switch over for a minute to KTAR. What brought you to Phoenix? What was your career like in Arizona? Because to this day, there are people that say, boy, I miss Hacksaw, or I loved hearing him on KTAR, or I couldn't stand hearing him on KTAR, which is the true compliment for any talk show host. I mean, what brought you to KTAR, and what was it like then?
Well, when I started in radio in small market Appalachia, I majored in communications and radio, television, journalism, got a couple of degrees at Ohio University, and started in small market radio and wound up doing play-by-play of high school games that had never been done before. And then I was a disc jockey, and then I became a program director of the station. And I did news and sports and sales, and just I learned an unbelievable amount of stuff in a very small market in southern Ohio. I went to upstate New York and in a medium-sized market and became a morning news anchor and a sports talk guy, and wound up doing hockey play-by-play, and spent 4 years there. I went to Cleveland, spent 7 years in Cleveland doing Major League Hockey, sports talk, reporting, covering games, and lost my job when the NHL and the WHA merged, but Cleveland was not part of the merger, so I was out in the street. I wound up going to Phoenix, working for a guy who had been in Cleveland prior and went to KTAR. And at that point, when I got to the Valley of the Sun, and I'll never forget this, Brad, it was May of 1981. This goes back a while.
Sure.
But I got to Phoenix in May of 1981, and they had been doing sports talk. KTAR was obviously a growing news talk station. And they had a four-hour show at nights from 6 till 10 p.m., the 620 Sports Line. And at that point, they had the rights to the Phoenix Suns, and the Suns owned the market. And they were also the flagship for the Dodgers. Dodger baseball in the Southwest, they called it the Great Southwest, was really important. And, of course, the Dodgers were really good. Well, I got there in May of 1981, and the minute I got there, Arizona State, which owned a big share of the emotional fan support in the Valley of the Sun, got thrown on football probation. And the minute I got there, the top-seeded Phoenix Suns got knocked out of the playoffs in the first round. And the minute I got there, baseball went out on strike. So the end result was I had a lot of, quote, hot topics on the table to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And because there was no baseball interrupting my show, the Valley of the Sun got to meet Hacksaw. We did 51 straight nights of four-hour sports talk radio. Now, back in that era, sports talk radio in Phoenix was nice radio. Mom and pop radio.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's fine. Everybody's great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I walked in the front door, and I swear to you, Brad, it just happened. I went on the air the first night. You remember my favorite phrase, here's what's going on in the world of sports. Here's what Lee Hamilton thinks, damn it.
Mm-hmm.
And I went on the air, and I was screeching about how could Arizona State, with that beautiful campus and all those facilities and that great reputation, why do you have to cheat? Well, that infuriated the Sun Angel Foundation. Just lit a bomb. And then I went on and said, how can the Phoenix Suns, who I happen to think one of the great run organizations in that era under Jerry Colangelo, how in the world could the Phoenix Suns get knocked out of the playoffs in the first round, being the top seed? And then, obviously, the baseball strike occurred, and I just lit into Major League Baseball. Well, the phone lines lit up like Christmas trees, because nobody had ever done this before. Nobody was telling people what they thought and then inciting the fans to call back and tell us what you thought. They had 51 straight nights of Lee Hacksaw Hamilton on the 620 Sports Line, and I was firing shots everywhere. And it exploded. It took off. And we really became a great news talk station, and it still is now. It's obviously on FM, and they flipped 620 to AM Sports. And they've done very, very well. And I was glad to be part of it. It was just a novel thing. And what I did is I formulated a philosophy of what I thought sports talk radio should be in that market. Might not be what it would be in New York or what it would be in Boston or Philadelphia.
Sure, sure.
But what was ideal for the Valley of the Sun. And I came to the realization very quickly that what I wanted to do was to do, in a sense, a national sports talk show in that market.
Mm-hmm.
And what I decided to do was not only cover the teams in town, and we talked a lot about all those teams in town, but also to do a lot of stuff about a lot of teams in a lot of different sports. Because I think you'll agree with me, the Valley of the Sun is a melting pot of people from everywhere, Brad. And they all have these emotional attachments back home. Back home could be the Chicago Cubs. Back home could be the Boston Red Sox. Back home could be the New York Football Giants. Back home could be anywhere. And I just started, I decided I was going to hit everybody's hot button. And I was going to cover all the teams and have a tidbit about as much in baseball as I could get to every day. And the same thing in basketball and football and hockey, because there are transplanted Canadians living in the Valley of the Sun, and obviously college athletics. So I just kind of covered the waterfront. And what I did was I guaranteed that if you were a NASCAR fan, if there was something breaking in NASCAR, you'd hear about it on my show, and we might even go get a guest to talk about what this story became. And I did that for tennis and golf and everything in addition to the major sports. So I hit on a formula that just ignited my show and ignited the radio station. And because of my style, it ignited confrontations with the media in that marketplace. And it was great because I'd throw stuff out there, partly because I believed it, but also partly to incite people to respond. And people responded, and in some cases, guys took the bait. And we just got massive amounts of publicity. So I did that for 7 years. And what we did was we not only built the station into a great news talk station and made the 620 Sports Line something unbelievably important in the Valley of the Sun, what it was, we started to attract people. And then suddenly Arizona State wanted to be on our stations, and the Sun Devils have remained on the KTAR family of stations since we were there in the early 1980s. And the program grew and came off probation, and the Suns had success. And obviously, I left in 1987 to come to San Diego to be the voice of the San Diego Chargers and start sports talk again in this market, and kind of duplicated what I did there back here in terms of taking sports talk to a very, very different level that had never been done before, and applying a lot of the things I did in Phoenix to what I did in San Diego. And we had unbelievably great success, as you witnessed, having worked with us, having had great success in San Diego, doing a lot of the same formula things. Now, it's changed over the last group of years. That's a very different world now. But that's the history of how I got to Phoenix and what my philosophy was and what I was going to do and how successful it became.
How about the people that you worked alongside of, not just in sports when you were at KTAR? That station then was every main personality wanted to be on that station, whether it was news, whether it was even the traffic reporter, the weather people. I mean, it was a lineup of who's who, and you were part of that lineup. This was before the 24/7 sports, all sports stations. Just tell me a little bit about the process of working with a bunch of big names and big personalities that weren't just sports related, and how important it was for you to be part of that mix.
Well, it was interesting because the radio station was not a raging success when I first got there. Within 6 months, it became a raging success. It was owned by Pulitzer Publishing, the newspaper people, and they gave us a lot of resources. And as I got there, they were trying to find their way of what they would do, and they decided to do a morning news block and an afternoon news block and talk shows during the day and big sports talk show at night and wrapping around a lot of play-by-play. And it just became a legendary station.
Mm-hmm.
In the Great Southwest, and we had a visionary program director by the name of Johnny Andrews. Johnny had come from Cleveland and come to Phoenix. He had tried to hire me in 1980. I didn't come at that point. I came in 1981 after I lost my job in Cleveland. And he was just a visionary, and he did some great things, and he was given a lot of great resources to do great things. And then the station started to grow, and the format has evolved, and that begat Pat McMahon, who had a tremendous run as a midday host, and that brought us Preston Westmoreland, who was just one of the most fun, generic talk show guys there were. And then I was loud and bombastic and belligerent on the air at night, and we had all this play-by-play, and the thing just came together so quickly. And I'll never forget, it might have been 6 months after I got there, and we were in constant rating periods, and the rating books came out, and KTAR had rocketed to number one. And we all kind of looked at each other and said, how did that happen?
Hmm.
Well, we didn't know what we were getting ourselves involved in, and I guess we never fully understood how the cross-section of talent there was. But it was just an unbelievable place to work. And then we had a great general manager who came on board, a gentleman by the name of Jim Tazarak, who came from St. Louis, and he was a Pulitzer guy. And he was a visionary in terms of the business side, and then obviously Johnny Andrews programmed the program inside, and it was just fun. It was very hard for me to leave. I had just bought a house. I thought I was going to be there forever because we were doing great things, and I really enjoyed the Valley of the Sun, hot weather notwithstanding. And then all of a sudden, I started to get all these offers to go different places, and I kept turning them down and turning them down. And, you know, I look back and people said, boy, you are stupid. You turned down KMOX in St. Louis or KNBR in San Francisco. But I had a kingdom that I liked. I loved the people I worked with. I loved going to work. And then all of a sudden this offer to do the NFL came out of nowhere, and I didn't even know these people over here. It was a really strange story as to how they hired me, but they said, would you come here and be the first increment in what we're going to turn into a big sports talk station? And we want you to be the voice of the Chargers. We know what you've done at Arizona State. I'd worked with Tom Dillon and Greg Schulte, who had both been there forever and ever. And we just had a really special thing going, Sun Devil Saturday and all that type of stuff we did. So it was amazing. I don't know that it was all pre-planned. It surely was not pre-packaged, but it evolved as we went. And I just look fondly back on the opportunity I was given, and I kind of seized that opportunity and said, this is what I'm going to do, and nobody interfered with me. I got yelled at occasionally for some of the things I said on the air, and that's okay. That goes with the format of being a talk show host, but it was a fun time. It's a different era now. I know the market's mm-hmm. different. Unfortunately, I left just before all the other things happened, because baseball arrived, and then obviously the St. Louis Cardinals came, became the Arizona Cardinals. Hockey arrived. I mean, it's such a vibrant, dynamic market with the Cactus League and the Grapefruit Circuit expanding and exploding in popularity, and the marketplace itself exploding. I just think it's a tremendous place to be in terms of action in the world of sports.
And that's why I came over. I mean, it was an opportunity where you could just see it coming. I'm curious, who mentored you through all of this? Because I teach at Cronkite every fall, and I get 50 advanced graduate students, and I talk about you've got to make your own path, and it's very competitive, and you're going to have everybody after your job. You know, it doesn't matter if you're a talk show host or play-by-play or sideline reporter, whatever it is you want to do, male, female, just this the industry from that standpoint. But you do have to find some people along the way to mentor you, or that you can lean on and just say, this is the struggles I'm going through. We've been bought and sold 3 times. We're about to be bought and sold. They're laying us off here. They're laying us off there. That's present day. I'm curious, on your journey, who mentored you or got you through it?
Well, like when I went to college in Ohio, I crossed paths with a gentleman by the name of Joe Tate. Joe was a visiting professor at Ohio University, and kind of ran their sports operation at the radio and TV stations. He was there for just a short period of time, but he was the greatest influence on my career. He gave me direction. He obviously recognized talent, because he allowed me to do a lot of things at a student-run station that had never been done before. Mm. We started doing high school play-by-play, and then I got to work on the Ohio Network and all that. So he was probably my biggest influence in terms of preparation and philosophy and ideology, but I think the key word is opportunity. I was given an opportunity to do this, to experiment, to learn this. So I guess you just have to be lucky to cross paths with the right guy who's a decision maker that says, okay, I recognize your talent. This is what I'd like you to do. This is how I want it to sound or structure it, and then grow within in the parameters of whatever that program director, that news director, that sports director offers. So, hey, Joe is probably the biggest influence, and then maybe the second biggest influence was the late program director and then general manager at KTAR, Johnny Andrews, who unfortunately just passed away last week, because he brought me to the Valley of the Sun, and he said, this is what we do, I want you to do it. And he knew what I was all about when I was in Cleveland mm-hmm. And in Akron. And he just gave me carte blanche to create, and I created. I did a lot of dynamic things, from not just talk radio, taking phone calls and arguing with the fans, but doing every conceivable type of guests. And then we involved, and again, this was the pre-internet era, then we involved with things like the tours of the spring training camps, where I would interview somebody at each of the 30 Major League Baseball camps, or the tour of the NFL training camps. The book review series. I donate a couple weeks in the middle of the summer to interview legendary authors about sports books they had written. And I was constantly changing the scope of the show on a night-by-night basis. It was much different topication. It was not sitting screaming yell about the same story every day. So it was all about the word opportunity, and then you creatively grow that opportunity. And as you grow, you make more contacts, and you're off to the races, and you do it as long as you can. And the industry's changed. It's absolutely amazing to me, and it's odd we mentioned KTAR, because Johnny Andrews just passed, and a friend of mine from the old KTAR days had put together a video when Johnny was leaving. Johnny was a very influential leader at KTAR, and on that video, there must have been 70 different employees that worked at all the stations that were part of the Pulitzer Group at that time. It's obviously now owned by a great chain, Bonneville. It struck me as odd that all these young people working together liked who they worked for, liked each other for the most part. The camaraderie that existed back then is so different than what we have to deal with today mm-hmm. with corporate America takeover. And, you know, I got wiped out by Clear Channel twice. Nothing I ever did deserved to be laid off, but I was bought out twice. And, you know, what my TV station just did when they put us all out of work in one day, I never had a station go dark. thought back then, I said, boy, what a fabulous place to work, and all these friends, and a couple of the other old KTAR alums that I'd emailed with this past week on Johnny's passing, all said the same thing. Said, man, that was a cool video. I had forgotten about that, or I had never seen that video, et cetera. So it's just a different workplace environment that we're in right now. Corporate America might be good, but corporate America might not be so good for a lot of employees.
What would you call the high-speed sports wire in a day of digital?
It's a concept that I can. It did exist. A lot of people don't understand that it did exist.
Sure, I saw it in your office. I saw it in your office every day. Well, I had a low speed sports wire when you and I first met up in Vista at a small little station that didn't have enough signal to power a microwave. So we had the low speed sports wire. I go into Lee's office. He has the high speed sports wire. It actually was high speed for back in the day. For those who don't believe it exists.
This is also how far back is this? This is pre-computer. This is manual typewriter.
Sure.
But it was an Associated Press. In essence, it was an Associated Press high-speed newspaper wire.
Yeah.
And it gave you a long-form copy. So it would send through a bulletin, Red Sox baseball trade story coming up. And then there'd be a follow-through, and there'd be a long-write story. And that would be the story that would go out to all the newspapers around the country. Well, we paid an additional price to get access to that sports wire. So I was having stuff in my hands hours and hours before it ever went to print or the next day in print. So we were able to develop the high-speed sports wire with the details of the Boston Red Sox 11-player trade with the Kansas City Royals. So that's what we developed, and there was so much information. And the other thing I did, I now jokingly refer to it because other people have saddled me with it, that I was the Internet before the Internet. But in that era, I set up a communication links with people all over the country. There wasn't a phone number in the world, Brad, that I wasn't afraid to call.
Mm-hmm.
And I would develop networks of other media guys, and we would swap information all the time. I had a guy in every NFL city that if I needed something on a Chicago Bears injury, it was because the Chargers were going to play the Bears. I could call and get information, and we'd swap information and swap notes, and then email took over. So then we started an email chain of contacts everywhere. Now, obviously, all that stuff might be accessible now to some degree on the Internet, but that's how I gathered all the information I did. Nobody ever gave us credit or gave me credit because I did all this by myself. I hardly had any help in terms of being a producer, and I was booking all the guests myself, and I was doing all the interviews myself, some live, some taped. I mean, I was just grinding. And I'll never forget, the big thing we had was college football recruiting. It was huge in Arizona. And I would work for weeks with a couple of recruiting gurus, and this is before the recruiting services really exploded. And we'd compile all the stuff, this national, the lists of hot names going to schools in the Big 12 conference, or hot names going in the SEC, and what's happening in the old Pac-10. And that just worked and worked and worked and worked. And just we set a format that this is what we do, and this is the information that will be available. And our recruiting shows were huge. Our NFL draft preview shows were huge. And this is before there was ESPN radio, and before all the multiple sports networks on TV, and obviously before the Internet. I was doing junk like that back in the 80s in Phoenix before it ever became the thing to do in the 2000s across America.
When you came from Phoenix to San Diego, and this is where you and I met one another, it was really, I tell people now, the amount of talent that was there, whether it was Buster Olney covering high school or Pedro Gomez covering high school or Bob Nightingale hanging around, Bill Plaschke hanging around. There was a convergence of the Los Angeles Times and San Diego, the San Diego Tribune, the San Diego Union, and there was Lee Hamilton's nightly show. And I was fortunate to be part of that. But there was also people like Wolfman Jack down in a studio that I would run into towards the end of his career because he was still part of that whole mix. There was an overnight guy named Jim Rome who turned himself into something. The collection of talent, Lee, that not just in Phoenix, but you go to San Diego and you go to the whole Southern California thing, if you've worked alongside of or you've built stations with, tell me about that process in Southern California. You've talked about Phoenix, but Southern California and that experience for you.
Well, I guess it's right time, right place, right opportunity again. Funny story, I was at work one afternoon at KTAR in Phoenix, and I'd been there 7 years. Had turned down a whole bunch of opportunities to go other places, just liked where I was and had a family and bought a house and all that. Phone rings. It's a guy from over in San Diego. He says, we know who you are. This is who we are. We're Noble Broadcast Group. We just got the rights to the NFL San Diego Chargers. We know what you've done at Arizona State. We know what you've done with your sports talk show. We'd like you to come to be the voice of the Chargers and be the first piece of what we think will be News Talk Sports over all sports. So, and I didn't know anything except the fact that the weather in San Diego was fabulous in the summer. That's all I knew about the marketplace. And so I asked him to explain a little bit more about the stations, and he said, well, we're a Mexican licensed station. We're 50,000 watts on, it's called Extra, at that point, Extra Solid Gold 690. And we play rock and roll music, and we're going to evolve the station into News Talk or all sports, and we want you and the Chargers to be the focal point. We're going to grow the station around you. And I thought to myself, well, that's novel. And I said, you're in Mexico? He says, yeah. Yeah, we have studios in Mexico and tower and transmitter. I said, well, I have a problem with that. He said, what's that? He said, I don't speak Spanish. I thought the guy was trying to hire me to do Spanish play-by-play in the National Football
League.
And then he went on to explain, no, we're transferring the studios to San Diego. We broadcast in English, et cetera.
So, I had so never heard this story. Here, that is a good story. That is great.
I got here in 1987. And they were at that time, they were an old rock and roll solid gold station. If you remember the movie American Graffiti, you remember Wolfman Jack. That was a takeoff of Wolfman Jack in San Diego, broadcasting for a Mexican station across the border. That station was 690.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got here, they were still solid gold, and they were trying to find their way and what they should do. And they were still playing music. And Wolfman Jack had been hired in the twilight of his career to come in to do the afternoon drive show. And he was actually doing it out of the studios they had just built in San Diego. So they play rock and roll, solid gold all day. Wolfman would come on with his cohorts. He had an entourage that stretched out into the hallway. And they were on from 2 o'clock till 6, banging the hits. And then at 6 o'clock, I'd come on and do sports talk. I mean, it was strange. It was eclectic. It was very different. The station evolved then into News Talk. And I was the first piece of that equation after they got out of the music business. And what transpired was that they couldn't quite find their way as a News Talk station. I thought it'd be a raging success. They never gave it enough time to grow. I thought it could have been KTAR all over again because we had the play-by-play and we had the sports talk guy. And
there was a national guy named Rush Limbaugh that they put on the air, too, at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, you know, at one point, Brad, and I think they only stayed with it for 9 months, unfortunately.
Yeah.
At one point, they had Rush Limbaugh in his very, very earliest days. They had Larry King, who at that point was still doing a generic interview news talk station, and they had Dr. Laura. They had those big three who became unbelievable players in the spoken word industry and talk radio. Those three plus Hacksaw. But they didn't, unfortunately, ownership did not give it enough time. But
right.
At the end of the day, they evolved, they flipped that, evolved from News Talk Sports to all sports, and we were off to the races. And it wasn't any magic formula. They stumbled across a lot of talent by accident, had no idea what they had, what they were doing, or what it would evolve and grow into, and it just became a raging success. Jim Rome was doing nights. He was just out of college. And what had happened was they had come to me. I had been established, and we were rocking and rolling an afternoon drive. And they'd come to me and ask me about going to syndication. I would have been the first one to do it. Nobody had ever done that before. And we explored it and examined it. And the only glitch in the whole thing was, well, here I was an afternoon drive, and we were killing it in terms of ratings. And it was right at the point that the Chargers became a playoff team and were going to the Super Bowl, and we kind of galvanized the community. And my comment to them was, does it make sense to take your afternoon drive guy, try to flip it into a network show when we're trying to drive ratings and numbers in Southern California with a hot property like the NFL franchise? Does it make sense for me to be taking calls from Detroit Red Wing fans or from somebody in Kansas City talking about the Royals or something like that?
Right.
And they thought about it and said, nah, it probably would not be as successful at day part. And then they came up with the idea, let's try a morning show, a midday show, and let's experiment with Rome. And that became the Jim Rome Show. And he started in a lot of small markets, you know, and he didn't have a lot of stations on his, on that, quote, mid-morning show on the network for a long period of time, and it grew and evolved, et cetera, and then it became a legendary success nationwide. But we had a lot of starts and stops with guys that didn't fit. I was the cornerstone. I was there forever. Romy was there right after me. He was there forever. And then they stumbled upon some guys just by accident, and they developed a show called The Loose Cannons with a guy out of L.A., Steve Hartman, and Chet Forty, the former Monday Night Football executive producer. It was a novelty show, and it just took hold because you had an old guy and a young guy arguing with each other. You had a West Coast guy and an East Coast guy arguing with each other. And they did a national show about national topics, and they'd go back and forth, back and forth. And it was kind of equivalent to Mike and the Mad Dog at WFAN in New York. So we all kind of launched this sucker together, and it took off. It took a little while. And it became a raging success. And unfortunately, Clear Channel Radio, iHeartRadio, destroyed it. But we were so successful in San Diego with a blowtorch signal that they couldn't get their stations working in Los Angeles, and they elected to blow up 690 and put us all out of work, which is unfortunate. It was big business making the decision. But, man, we had a run with people. And people in this community, people in Orange County, people in L.A. still remember all the great things, the old extra 690 did back in the day. But that's how we grew. It was by accident. I don't think it was a massive game plan. I don't think anybody had a blueprint. They stumbled badly, then they stumbled upon talent, and then it became really good for a chunk of time, and then obviously guys left and went other places.
Let me finish up on this with who do you listen to now in terms of radio do you consume and that you really think has it figured out?
Well, I guess this is an old school opinion.
Sure. That's fine.
The landscape has changed. I'm not so sure it's changed for the good of the industry. There's a lot of people doing sports talk radio, which is good in terms of potential jobs, etc. The bad thing is not all of them are really talented. I think the other thing that's really impacted it is that there is now a drive to hire a lot of ex-athletes and to put them on the air, whether they're good, bad, or indifferent, whether they know the topics or don't know the topics, whether they speak eloquently or can't speak a word of English. Athletes are getting a lot of the jobs now, and that's unfortunate because I don't think they're all that talented. I think they all have their place in the industry. So that landscape has really changed, and I'm not so sure it's changed for the good. The other thing has changed is, you know, social media is kind of cool, Twitter, Instagram, and all that. It's cool because you can get access to information, and like I say, we're a really informed society, but Twitter, for example, has also become very mean and very nasty, and I think that's very, very unfortunate in terms of some of the social media use. So our landscape has really, really changed. Who do I listen to? I kind of punch in and out of a lot of stuff. You know, I spent some time doing stuff at SiriusXM. I had a blast 3 years. I did a whole bunch of baseball shows every week for this. At that point, it was called SiriusXM Home Plate Channel. Met a ton of people. I like some of the national perspectives. So I follow some SiriusXM stuff occasionally, too, on each of their specialty channels, baseball, football, and the NHL. So I kind of dabble. I read all the time. I'm still...
Who do you read? Where do you go? What's your morning look like in terms of reading?
Well, I do a lot of research for my website, but I'm kind of chained to the internet. Mm-hmm. I like it. You know, I like to see what the guys in the Boston Globe are writing, or what the guys in the Washington Post are writing, or if I need a background on what the hell's happened at Oregon State in the Pac-12 conference with their football program coming apart at the seams. So I go access all that. I just like to read what a lot of other quality journalists write, and it just gives me a base of information so that I'm better informed. So I want to write on my website, I just go ahead and do it. It's just a different time, and I understand that. I'm not emotionally attached to it. God, it was great back in the day. It was great back in the day. Now that day is a little bit different now, and that's okay with me. But it's really nice to be remembered. And as I step back from this, sometimes I think about all the friends I've made and the people that I've done. It hasn't been easy. You know, I've gotten wiped out of a couple NFL jobs for nothing I ever did. You know, the Chargers left our station, the Chargers left our city, and I went to Seattle and did the Seahawks and had a blast, and suddenly the station gave up the rights, and, you know, my stations here gave up the rights to the Padres and gave up the rights to the Astros. They just gave up everything. And so people get victimized when other people make decisions that are in the best interest. So it's just a different time. But I've enjoyed it. I would not have traded a minute of my career because I do like it, and I still have contacts everywhere. And I, you know, maybe I'll wake up tomorrow morning. There'll be when the phone rings, I answer it. Might be you. It might be somebody offering me different jobs, or somebody just responding to my question about a certain sports story. But I just enjoy the industry. It's a different industry now, and I accept that and I understand that.
Your view of ESPN and layoffs and content that ESPN, I've looked at ESPN and said they've gotten into the habit of LeBron, Tom Brady, East Coast, Carmelo, Flip, repeat on their left side, top of the rail, we call it. The big national sports brands, the Fox Sportses that have decided to go into the talking heads mode in the mornings with Skip Bayless and those sorts of shows. What's your view of what's going on the TV side in sports media?
Well, everybody's got an opinion. Everybody's got to have a right to have an opinion. Everybody has the ability to take their resources and throw it on the air. I just question who has time to watch all this. That's the big issue to me. You know, they like to say there's 500 channels on my television now with all the stuff we have. Well, I guarantee you it's not 500 different things of good content.
Yeah, yeah.
On all these different channels, on all these different stations, but I watch some of it. I don't pay a great deal of attention to it. I don't need to watch SportsCenter for the most part, because I already know what's going on. And I don't care what the host has to say about the slam dunk where the guy broke the backboard. Who cares? I mean, it doesn't appeal to me. Might appeal to you, might appeal to your listener, some other fan. That's cool. That's okay. But I don't watch as much of it. I love play by play. I think the thing that's great that we do now have access to is we have access to an absolute ton of play-by-play on television. I don't know who's watching it all. You know, I go across my channel at night and I can see college basketball games involving Texas Tech and Kansas. Well, outside of the people in Lubbock or Manhattan, Kansas, anybody care about that game? So it's an awful lot of play-by-play on TV, but it's just neat. You know, and obviously DirecTV now and technology allows us to watch every NFL game on a Sunday if we wish, or you know, baseball, we're allowed to see a lot of different things with MLB Network, et cetera. So I do watch some of the network shows, like what MLB Network does and to a degree what NFL Network does. But in terms of do I have to see Stephen A. Smith every morning, or do I have to have to watch Skip Bayless and the other guys sharp running their mouth? Nah. But other people are drawn to it, and so be it, and that's okay.
How about play-by-play guys that you enjoy, specific play-by-play guys that you've listened to or that you look at and say, wow, this person has got it going on in a big way? Because you've been in that space before. There's got to be a few that you look at today and say, I really like hearing this person or that person.
Well, back in the day, I mean, I could sit in my backyard for hours and listen to Vin Scully. I was spoiled. When I lived in Phoenix, I used to sit in the backyard. It'd be 110 degrees outside, and I'd sit in the backyard under the tree listening to Vin Scully do Dodger baseball because he was an artist. And, you know, John Miller in San Francisco, just legendary. I think Greg Schulte is really great on D-backs baseball. You know, and it just across the board, you know, I'm a big hockey fan. So obviously I like the guys on NBC TV who do NHL hockey. I was a great fan of the late Keith Jackson. And I've interviewed all these people, too,
sure,
by the way.
Sure.
So, I had relationships with all of them. So, you know, we've just had opportunity to cross paths with some really good people. I was kind of spoiled because I grew up on Long Island. A lot of people don't know I'm a New York guy. But I grew up on Long Island, and I grew up in the era of the Yankees, Dodgers, and the Giants in the borough, and I got to watch a lot of Yankee, Dodger, Giant games on TV and listened on radio incessantly. And I grew up in the era of Mel Allen, Phil Rizzuto, and Red Barber. Now, those may not ring very many bells for the current-day listener you have on your podcast, but I'll tell you what, those people were artists, and they kind of set the tone. And, you know, you remember Jack Buck, and you remember Bob Prince in Pittsburgh. And, again, I may be pulling names out of the sky here that a lot of people don't remember. But I guarantee if you're a transplant in the Valley of the Sun and you moved here from somewhere else, you do remember Harry Carey. You do remember Jack Brickhouse back in the day. So Those are kind of the people that I listen to, and I really enjoyed.
Wrap this up with, what do you want to do next? I know you've said a couple of times you're waiting for the phone to ring, or if the phone rings, great. Do you want to keep going back to a daily radio thing? Is it a TV thing? Is it a digital thing? Is it writing every day? What is it you want to do next?
I want to be active. Period, exclamation point. End of discussion. I don't know. That's a good question. Newspaper guy I talked to last week was doing this kind of a story on sports guys doing internet stuff, and he knew my history, my background, and he just plain simple said, you know, what's next out there? I said, well, I love play-by-play. I wish I was still doing play-by-play. I developed the philosophy when I was a longtime voice of the Chargers and the Seahawks that you'll remember this. The world stops at 1 o'clock for NFL football every Sunday afternoon. I love game day. I just had a blast. I had a blast with the Chargers, and then I went up to Seattle and just had 3 years of just tons of fun doing Seahawk games at the Kingdom, etc. I also reflect back, though, now, and I said, how the hell did I do all that? I was working 7.5 days a week
mm-hmm.
because when we were together, Brad, I was doing that talk show Monday through Friday, and then I was doing San Diego State Aztec football on Saturday and doing the Chargers on Sunday.
Yep.
And then that evolved to doing a talk show, and I was doing USC football and the Seahawks on Sunday. So I was meeting myself coming and going to the airport, and I look back and say, man, how did I do that? All that preparation and all that travel, et cetera. But I loved it. And so I don't know. We'll see where we go next. I'd love to do some more play-by-play, but have not really been afforded that opportunity because there have not been as many jobs open in that venue in a long period of time. Sports talk radio, maybe if it's the right situation, got to be at the right station. And just continue to write and continue to do what I do day after day.
Good stuff. I appreciate the time and everything that you've shared with us. Anything else you want to add before I get you out of here? Like, you didn't ask me this, or anything else you want to just throw on top of it?
Yeah, I just think it's a dynamic world. It's a very different world right now. I think for young people in the media, I think it's still a great industry to be involved in. It's a different industry now than when you and I first kind of got involved in it, and that's okay. But I think there's tremendous potential and growth for men and women on the TV side, on the internet digital side, maybe not so much in radio and surely not so much anymore in the newspaper business. But sports is a huge part of our society, Brad, and I think people still have great opportunities to grow in a very different sports world now than when you and I first broke in.
Lee Hacksaw Hamilton, it's been a pleasure. Thanks.
Brad, my pleasure. Anytime. Continued success in your career.
There's Lee Hamilton with us, and that is the Arizona Media Podcast for this week.